Welcome, everybody, to your favorite day of the week. I am Anthony Irwin. I am joined by Adam Mattis. Adam, we are halfway through bubble basketball, and Michael Porter Jr. is a super-duper star. How are you doing?
He is a super-duper star. I'm doing great, I'm telling you, you really threw me off by telling me that we are halfway through the bubble, because you're right, we are, and it feels like that happened really fast. I feel like a full season's worth of things have happened in a week.
It absolutely has. Today's show, we are going to take you through last night's games. We had plenty, and it's wild how many of these games have been good. It's weird. You have good teams play against good teams, and you get good results. It's the weirdest thing.
It is my favorite thing, though, Anthony, being serious here for a second, that when you look at the schedule, it's just like every matchup is good because, as you mentioned, every team is good. So it's like, oh, yeah, this is fun. No gimmies.
It's like if the NBA was the NFL for a little while.
Yeah, it kind of feels like that. Where, any given Sunday kind of feel to it. It's fun.
Yep. So we're going to take you through those games. In the second segment, we have probably the biggest story that might come out of the bubble.
Oh, God. Well, I hope so, because it's a bad story, but I hope there's nothing worse than that story.
Yeah, yeah. So Ben Simmons dislocated his kneecap, essentially. And as somebody who watched that injury kind of sort of derail a career up close and personal, we are going to take you through that and what that might mean for Philadelphia moving forward. And then in the final segment, as we do while basketball is here with us, we are going to power rank something. And in this case, we are going to power rank players who have outplayed their normal abilities here in Orlando, or out there in Orlando. So
all stepping
really
up
fun
team.
Show. The all stepping up team, or the all holy crap, where'd they get that contract from team? Let's start though with the New Orleans Pelicans falling to the Sacramento Kings 140-125. And in a lot of ways, I feel like this summarized the Pelicans season, right? Zion Williamson was special, making 10 of 12 field goals, only played 22 minutes though, and the Pelicans couldn't stop a leak. They had 49 points put on them in a game they absolutely had to win in the first quarter.
Yeah, 49 points in the first quarter, 40 in the third quarter. And Zion, you know, he is so efficient, 10 of 12, 24 points. But defensively, that New Orleans team just looking the way that they have, I think is it's a concern. Now, I know I've watched a guy here in Denver play 20 or fewer minutes, and I know it's tough when you're on a minutes restriction or whatever to really get the best of yourself, but I don't want to fully count the New Orleans Pelicans out, because they're still very much like anything can happen here. I'm watching teams like Portland, even Phoenix, and I'm just thinking they don't look like it. Even San Antonio, mm-hmm. to be honest with you. I just feel like New Orleans on a whole other level down from those guys since this bubble started, and I don't know that they're going to bounce back given some of the limitations with Zion and the minutes restrictions.
It's got to be kind of hard from the other player's perspective. We are supposed to be out here playing for our playoff lives, and our team superstar can't play more than 20 minutes.
It's got to be frustrating. But at the same time, more frustrating would be to lose one of your star players, you know, the way that we got with a Jaren Jackson Jr., for example, or a Jonathan Isaac. So I empathize with Pelicans fans and sort of the frustration and the excitement of the bubble and, oh, this is the chance, and then sort of the letdown so far. But you always think long in the NBA, especially when this is really year one of this New Orleans team. But again, we're putting the cart before the horse, because they still have a chance here.
Yeah, I meant more from the teammates' perspective. And I think this is kind of where the defense really kind of ails is, all right, I guess we were supposed to try here. I don't know. Next game on the docket is the Milwaukee Bucks getting beaten most of the game by the Miami Heat and then scoring 20 straight points in the fourth quarter to take care of business there. And I don't know if you're able to catch that the fourth quarter there, but it felt mean what Giannis was doing to Miami.
It was mean, and it was dominant, and it was exactly what the Milwaukee Bucks look like when they put their foot on the gas right now, especially in that Eastern Conference. The Milwaukee's an interesting one, because Miami has, I think, been impressive. Toronto has been impressive. Milwaukee still feels like they're the top dog.
Sleeping dragon. Yeah, the Heat to me. So Toronto was interesting with the Bucks because I think they have the size to at least make Giannis think about his trips to the basket. But Miami had nobody that Giannis cared even a little bit down the stretch in front of the basket. I think the same applies to Boston, that like when he really wants to get to the basket, there's nobody who is going to stop him from doing so. And over the stretch where the Bucks scored 20 straight points against Miami, it felt like varsity versus JV. It just felt like a bully kind of situation.
38 to 18 in the fourth quarter, just to absolutely drop the hammer on him.
That was crazy. The next game here is the Phoenix Suns continuing their magical bubble run here.
They might be the team of the bubble.
Look, as somebody who dealt with all the Steve Nash stuff and all of that, I am not particularly fond of the Phoenix Suns.
Oh, geez.
But they have been legitimately fun. Like, legitimately fun.
We're doing the, all bubble breakout team later on, and we were arguing about a couple different Phoenix Suns. The only team in the bubble still 4-0, still undefeated inside the bubble. And it's funny, coming into it, you saw all the models, all the little predictions, all of the little odds about who has the best chance. Phoenix never got above like a 1% chance of making it into the playoffs. They now are, I wouldn't say sitting in the driver's seat. I think that's still, Memphis and Portland, Memphis holding on, Portland surging. But Phoenix, man, at what point do you start to, sort of give them credit for what they've been doing? I think it's coming up awfully quick, although they do have a tough schedule.
I think the fact that they've been doing it on the defensive side makes me feel a little bit better about the sustainability of what they're doing.
It's they not have like an elite defender on their squad.
Yeah. Michael Bridges is holy crap. The next game on the board here is the Clippers beating the Mavs. And once again, it's just, look, everything that the Mavs are going to do runs through Luka, and the Clippers have two players who can guard Luka. And I think that's always going to be the heart of the mismatch between those two teams.
What do you make of the fact that Dallas has just been so bad in the clutch this year? Because to me, that's more of a story than anything. And it's even Luka in particular. You look at this one, it's a game going into the fourth. You saw the game the other day. It was a collapse down the stretch. It just, that was the rap on them throughout the season. You get back in the bubble, you think, let's see what happens. Rap on them again.
Yeah, I really think it's that over the course of the game, you get a feel for what it is Dallas is trying to do. And then it gets even more simplified down the stretch. And, against any kind of, especially when all these teams are capable here in the bubble, it's only going to get further heightened. I don't know. Yeah. It's just my running theory.
Yeah. Relying so much, Luka's sort of counterpunch to so much of what he does is that step back, and it just has not been working for him, inside the bubble. I think he had statistically a bit of a rough year, but in the bubble especially, it has been really rough with that step back.
Yep. The final couple games here, the Blazers take down your Denver Nuggets, 125-115. Damian Lillard remains the scariest thing to me in that first round, and he just keeps reminding you why. 45 points, 12 assists on 11 of 18 three-point shooting. Good Lord.
Yeah, he was on fire. Nurkic really opens up, I think, so much of Damian Lillard's game because he becomes that sort of like
– great point.
That giant gravity in the paint rolling to the rim that sucks so much in and keeps Lillard open. But to me, here's the story. Obviously, I covered Denver, so the most closely monitoring this story – the Nuggets are down. Jamal Murray, Gary Harris, Will Barton, Paul Millsap today. None of those guys played. They pretty much punted on this game. Nikola Jokic tonight, 23 and a half minutes played. You look up at top, Damian Lillard, 41 minutes played, 45 points scored, and they kind of eke out this game. As I know it says a 10-point game, but it was Denver was up with 5 minutes to go. So this was an interesting one because – the storyline to me, and I know we're going to talk about it a lot later, Michael Porter Jr. for large stretches of this game was going to, I mean, Damian Lillard was the best player on the court. Michael Porter Jr. was the second for large portions of this. And to me, that makes three games in a row for Michael Porter Jr. playing at that level. One of the major storylines of the bubble so far.
There was a weird quote from Michael Malone about the injuries that Denver has had, and he basically said something along the lines of, yeah, I thought that we were going to get some guys healthy, but apparently not. What's going on there?
Very ominous. I mean, Denver has been hit as hard as anybody in the bubble with both injuries and also with Nothing was ever confirmed by the team, but they had, I think, 9 players late arriving to the bubble. So they have been kind of under the gun from the start of this. But then you arrive, Jamal Murray, hamstring, Will Barton, knee, Gary Harris, hip. That's 3 starters. Michael Malone was asked yesterday after their game. They just played a back-to-back, but he was asked yesterday after the game if it was, you know, a playoff game, would any of the guys played, and he said no. So,
oh my God.
that's a little, definitely a little ominous.
Very. Similarly ominous is the Lakers shooting, I believe right now, 23% from 3-point range in the bubble.
What's going on with this offense?
I think they just missed another 3-pointer. That makes me, you know, it's not great.
Are you liking the looks they're getting?
So in this game, no, but I think that has a lot to do with LeBron not playing.
Yeah, this game.
So you're not, you know, there's not much that you can get there. They have generated something like 50. I know Pete, my co-host on Lockdown Lakers, went back and bless his soul, watched all of the 3-pointers that the Lakers took and counted 50 like legitimately good looks. Of which they've made like 20% of them or 23%, when you usually expect to make about 40% of those. And so I think in that respect, they're generating good looks. But, you know, to quote every single pickup player who has had a teammate struggle, why do you think you're getting those looks? Why do you think you're open?
Yeah.
You know, and yes, the Lakers can generate those looks, but they have not been a particularly great 3-point shooting team all season. They have taken, you know, of teams in the bubble, they are in the bottom half of number of shots from 3-point range taken. So the math is always going to be against them. And so far in the bubble, they made it work to go, you know, to this point 2-3. But, you know, as you play tougher teams, that math is going to get louder. And that's where I'm a little bit concerned about the Lakers.
Houston, on the other hand, has been one of the I shouldn't say surprises, but they've been one of the early bubble winners darlings of the bubble, I would say, over the first 4 games, going 3-1 over that stretch. And just looking like, I think Houston's best bet isn't to be the most talented team, but to be, you know, so different, so unique, and so effective at what they do that they, you know, can get teams better than them. And that's sort of what they look like to me. I don't think they're better than the Lakers, Clippers, Bucks. I think they're on par with all of the other teams you would start to rattle off after that, including Toronto. But they seem to have the ability to play with that such a high variance and such a different style. The Houston-Dallas game earlier in the week felt like a completely different sport than anything I've ever watched before. I can't dispute that. It was fast-paced. It was crazy how quickly both teams were pulling the trigger. And it was working. I mean, it was an incredibly high-scoring game.
I'm here for all kinds of kind of fight types, you know.
Yeah.
Styles make fights. The one thing, you know, just really quickly to finish up here on the Lakers have relied all season on great chemistry. And so far they're missing Avery Bradley, who made up a big part of their defensive identity. They don't have Rajon Rondo, who is one of the loudest voices in that locker room. Lionel Hollins didn't make the trip to Orlando at all. Mm. And he's the second in charge on the coaching staff. And DeMarcus Cousins, who, despite not playing at all this season with the Lakers, was somebody that could call out AD and LeBron. And you know, when you're talking about – huh?
Is that true?
Yeah, no, all of those guys talked about it. LeBron has said it, AD has said it, that at any given moment, if those guys were slipping up on defense or if those guys weren't taking advantage of something they should be on offense, DeMarcus Cousins was right in their face. So, you know – chemistry is this weird, inherently volatile thing. And when you have so many things that are kind of out of whack there, you kind of risk losing a lot of that chemistry. And for the Lakers, who relied so heavily on it, I think that's something that, while it's early and while these things can turn around, that I think everybody should really pay close attention to. Hmm. That's going to do it, though, for the first segment here. And what we're going to do when we come back is we're going to talk about a real bummer of a story here in Ben Simmons. The report is that he's subluxated his patellar tendon. Basically, he dislocated his kneecap. Lakers fans will remember that with Andrew Bynum, and that basically he was never quite the same after that. So when we come back, we're going to talk about what the various situations might mean for the Philadelphia 76ers moving forward. So we don't have too many reports, you know, kind of confirming the severity of the situation. I know Ben Simmons is really looking at all the different circumstances and scenarios and treatments that he can go through. But if this follows the same healing path that Andrew Bynum followed, I believe it was about a decade ago, maybe a little bit more than a decade ago, this is not the kind of injury that you want somebody to have to deal with. And this can really hold Simmons out for quite some time. So, and by the way, Philadelphia had some serious questions facing them heading into this bubble in the first place.
So I don't want to speculate on the length of time or the recovery process or any of that, because what it sounds like, everything being reported, the Sixers are not very optimistic that, you know, this is days, this is weeks, right? And it likely will play Simmons out for at least the foreseeable future, but probably for most, if not all, of this bubble tournament. So that does mean that you go into another season, or potentially could go into another season, having to make a decision on what direction to go with your franchise and not having another data point. So to me, this is pretty catastrophic for Philadelphia, not just their chances this year, because I think they needed, obviously, Simmons. And by the way, they were a great dark horse pick. I hadn't liked the way that they played, and I personally was not a big believer in them sort of making the leap. But you at least could make the argument, look, there's some two giant, sort of high variance players in Embiid and Simmons, and they can go toe-to-toe with anybody on any given night. You take that away, I just think this sort of kills the season for the 76ers in a lot of ways, and not just now, but also puts them in a pickle going forward.
Also, a thing to keep in mind here, as they have all these questions facing them, is they're going to have a short offseason to take care of that.
Right? Yeah.
This is very not, short. You know, this is not going to be your typical, hey, we have a month here, a month there, whatever. The NBA has talked about a potential timeline where they have teams back here, what was it, by early December, where teams were going to be starting their next season. So that doesn't give you very much time to make some of these organizational altering decisions. And this is, like you said, them making those decisions in yet another year where they don't quite understand what they have in the combination between Simmons and Joel Embiid.
This is another and a negative example of this, of just how quickly fortunes can plummet in the NBA and how quickly windows can close. And I'm not saying that Philadelphia's windows for sure closed. I'm not saying for sure any of this stuff, but if they do miss out on this year, where they just miss out on an opportunity to approach this and put their best foot forward with this playoff run, 3 years ago, you would have said, oh man, look at these two dominant young players. The future's theirs. They own it. They had all those other assets. Here we are 3 years later, and it might be the end of the run. It's just, it's wild to me sometimes how quickly teams that have taken that slow burn process, how long it takes to get it going, and how quickly it can all come to a halt.
Can I give a bit of a hot take though?
Okay.
This kind of gives Horford a little bit more value in this rotation.
Does it matter though? Is this team going to win a championship?
Not a championship. And also, of course, not a championship. Do they win a series? Is there any way to salvage any momentum at the end of the season?
Yeah.
You know, if they have any success early on in these playoffs, and it's on the back of Al Horford and Joel Embiid functioning together as the center of the offense, as the center of the game plan, do they decide, all right, we got to fit. This is the way we're going to move forward. Best of luck, Ben, moving forward or whatever. Is this the end of the Simmons era there? And, you know, cause they're going to have to make one of these calls. Cause while Simmons and Embiid and Horford were there, Horford was in a lot of ways the odd man out.
It was a bad trio, but I think it's a bad duo as well with your two bigs in the front court. I think there's redundancy of the positives there and sort of an inflammation of the negatives. So I don't know about that, but this Simmons, I mean, when you talk about the three guys, they're three high profile guys, Jonathan Isaac, Jaren Jackson Jr. and now Ben Simmons leaving the bubble. That's we're 1 week into this. That's a lot for a week. That's a really bad week in regular NBA times. And the fact that it happened here in the bubble in this first week, I think it's maybe the most concerning, I guess, or the darkest cloud that has so far hovered over the NBA bubble.
Well, I think the phrasing you used initially is perfect. It is concerning. It's hugely concerning that these guys are all coming off of a 4-month hiatus and are being asked to ramp up really quickly to playoff basketball. It's not like these things are probably going like.
And Anthony, you mentioned, I mean, we talked about a little bit earlier. To figure this out. LeBron rests for the Lakers tonight. Tonight, Jokic playing 23 minutes. Paul Millsap just taking a rest day. Like, it's funny. We got so excited for this. We thought the games – and the games have been competitive. I think they've been fantastic and everything else. But I do wonder with this next week, Denver could have taken over the 2 seed today. With the Clippers losing, Denver kind of actually leaped frog into the 2 seed. And they – rather than even try – and by the way, Anthony
– and they knew they that, had by the way.
They had the lead with 6 minutes to go, 5-6 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. Jokic never checks in on the fourth quarter. They just completely punted on it, and it's weird. It feels like a preseason game. Very much a Denver is not trying to win this, or they're not putting their best foot forward. I think with the Lakers resting LeBron, you're seeing the same thing, and that's not a complaint. It's just kind of interesting that we're kind of being smacked with this, the reality of it's more important to be healthy in the playoffs than it is to be seeded in any given way.
There's also literally no difference between the 3 and the 2 seed.
There is no difference between a 6 and a 3 seed. So you get the DJ to play. You get your own advertisements on the court. I guess that's something.
Maybe practice times. I don't know. No difference whatsoever. All right, let's take another quick second here. And when we come back, we are going to power rank the 5 players so
far.
I got five.
I got some honorable mentioners, though. I got some honorable.
Five entities, I think, because I don't know how we're handling Phoenix. the 5 entities that have outplayed expectations to this point. All right, so I already know one of the names that are going to be on this list, and I know we're going to spend.
I kind of wanted to do this in reverse order, so I kind of have my player of the bubble. But I'm going to first give you a couple of honorable mentions that I have on here. Derek White, I think, has been really fantastic. The Spurs, you know, got off to that really good start in the bubble. They've dropped the last two, but they were kind of a feel-good story for a while. And despite not having very many of their actual sort of star players there, Daniel House with Houston, I think, has been really impressive. He's been shooting the leather off the ball. You've got Aaron Holiday, who I know had that monster game against who was it Philadelphia? Yeah, it was Philadelphia.
Yeah.
He had that really incredible one. And then Troy Brown Jr. You can't have a 76er in the top, or a Washington Wizard in the top 5. You just can't do it, but he deserves honorable mention because he's been playing above his average.
I was looking at the standings and getting ready for the show. I can't believe they let the Wizards in here with 24 wins.
Yeah, it's pretty ridiculous.
Unbelievable.
It's pretty ridiculous. On, even they thought that was ridiculous.
and then on top of that, Bradley Beal isn't playing. Davis Bertans isn't playing.
Off the top of your head, so they have not won a game. Do you know the one other team who has not won a game in the bubble so far?
Orlando?
You know, you're going to hit yourself when I tell you.
Is it Orlando?
Memphis Grizzlies. Memphis, who is completely fumbling that, and just is and now, you know, obviously the tragedy has struck. But okay, reverse order here. Fred Van Fleet. Now,
shouts to guys named Fred. Woo!
That's right. I forgot about that. Shouts to them indeed. Now, he should, you could make the argument that he should be higher than 5th on this list, but he's a bit of a established entity already. I mean, I already think that he, like, you know, was one of the better players for the Raptors down the final two stretches of two playoff rounds right there. So he's already sort of had enough of a breakout.
Steph didn't want to guard him.
We've seen him at this level in high profile situations. That's the only reason. But he is playing above right now his average this regular season. He's playing out of his mind.
He's also due to get paid.
He is due to get paid, and he's going to get that money. And I'm happy for him to get that money because he's a heck of a player. I think he'll be good outside of that system as well. I don't think it's just one of those things. He's got a talent. 23 points a game. But by the way, the numbers here are actually ridiculous. 23 points, 52% from the field, 50% from the 3-point line, 94. So he's 50-50, 94 right now inside the bubble.
I too think he's going to be legitimate wherever he goes. I'm a little nervous about how small he is, you know, just at that position or whatever for switchability, but if you can shoot the way that he can shoot, especially in big moments, like he's already done, this is the second time he's done this in terms of being this great a shooter in this kind of a setting. And if that becomes a replicable thing moving forward, then yeah, he's worth every penny. Unless he goes to the Knicks, because they're never going to be in this kind of situation.
So if you want crazy numbers here, the next guy on my list, man, you could really make a case for them for him being even higher, but it's Gary Trent Jr. Got an up-close personal look at him today. In the bubble now through four games, 20 points per game for Gary Trent Jr., 20.3 to be exact. 59% field goal shooting, 63% three-point shooting, and that's on 9 attempts per game, and 71 field. So he's going 60-60. He's actually almost 60-60-60. But those, he is absolutely in a zone with his shot right now.
I thoroughly enjoy Gary Trent Jr.
Me too.
From the standpoint of, that is such an important position, and Portland especially desperately needed people at that position. And he just steps up here in a huge way. And I just really like guys who I think he was like a second round pick, or he went undrafted basically. And it's just, again, I think ready for a contract kind of deal, or at the very least an extension. And I'm looking forward to see what he gets.
Really cool story. So him and Michael Porter Jr. battling today, and it was a real nice battle. I mean, Gary Trent Jr. checks into the game and it's just like brings the intensity up to 100. Really got in Michael Porter's grill. Apparently those two had Michael Porter was held to his lowest total ever in the EYBL circuit going up against Gary Trent Jr. at the Peach Day or whatever it's called in Georgia, in Atlanta.
That's crazy.
Yeah, and then came back and put it to him in the championship. So those two have, I guess, a little bit of a history, and it made for a really fun one-on-one battle tonight.
Yeah. I was watching a game earlier this year where the Lakers and Blazers were playing, and his high school coach was actually in the room while we were watching the game. And he was just, like high school coaches obviously are really going to believe in their guy. But the reasons he was giving for why he thought that Gary Trent was actually going to be a legitimate NBA player were actually made a lot of sense. And to see him kind of showing out here, it's been fun to watch that high school coach's kind of prediction come to fruition.
I love his intensity. If he shoots anything like this, he's a player. The next one, you said entity because they're all players except for one. I went with the Phoenix Suns.
Atlanta Hawks,
yeah,
this player of the month.
This is, you all deserve a little pat on the back, but let's see, how could we not? They're 4-0 inside of this bubble, counted out by everybody, including you, including me. And here they are right back in the thick of things. And they look like a team that they look like what a Phoenix fan would hope they would look like. That is a young team that's like taking a step forward.
What makes me excited about Phoenix, like I said earlier, is their defense. Michael Bridges, especially, is special on that end. My one thing here, we saw this last year with the Sacramento Kings, was the young team that outdoes expectations, and then those expectations become the expectation next year, and then falls short of them. You know, it's easy in the NBA to get to mediocre. Mediocrity is something that, just ask the Spurs, is something that you can do forever, but can you take that next step? You know, and it's too early to say that now. It's a great story right now, but whether or not they can take that next step, I'm hoping they can. Cause I, as much crap as I give Devin Booker for the whole double team fiasco last offseason, he is a really fun player and he's been outstanding in the bubble.
Yeah, he really has. I liked him more this season than I had in any season previous. So to see him, you know, have his moment sort of in this bubble is good. And as much as I don't think they're the most interesting first round matchup for the Los Angeles Lakers, I still find myself rooting for them just because I like a good story of a team coming together. Next on my list, TJ Warren. I mean, where else could I go? This guy, 34 points per game over the stretch, 59% from the field, 54% from the 3-point line. Can I tell you something? And you're going to totally have forgotten this. I called this one. I don't remember if you were talking when we were talking about Indiana a couple weeks back coming into it. I said one guy that I'm really curious about because they had the Jimmy Butler feud. Do you remember this?
His mind. Yeah.
Since that Jimmy Butler fiasco where Jimmy Butler shut him down and was talking all that trash, since then, TJ Warren had really, really started to come on. He finished the season on a really high note. So I thought maybe he'll carry it into the bubble. And my goodness, this dude is on fire. Great shot selection, knocking down tough shots, getting easy ones. And really another one of the like sort of feel good stories so far inside this bubble, watching him and this Pacers team get off to a 3-1 start.
Took a bit of a step back in the game against Phoenix, and it's been kind of hard to watch TJ Warren do that and like think about, dude, he was a cap casualty. Like they attached a pick to get rid of him. Yeah. Good Lord.
I know. Hey, bad organizations stay bad. Not always, but often for reasons, and that's one of them. But I'm happy for TJ. TJ Warren's another one of these dudes. So great scorer at NC State. Comes into the NBA as sort of like a tweener. Like he's the guy that shoots mid-range. He's an old school game. Has reinvented himself, and now he's one of those guys that it's like, you know, he didn't come out of the package a star, but he's really elevated himself now to sort of the fulcrum of what the Indiana Pacers are doing right now.
Really, really effortless stroke.
Effortless.
Like you could really see how his shot is something that you can replicate moving forward for the rest of his career.
Like he had a bit of a DeRozan game to him. Like he had great footwork, great, but it was just mid-range. And so he's slowly been able to extend that and really make himself into a smart, efficient player. And I love watching players that can reinvent themselves like that.
Well, I think he's a little thicker than DeRozan.
Different body types, but I'm just saying that they operate in
I agree with your premise, but I think what has made him successful in evolving and modernizing his game is the additional muscle that allows him to shoot so effortlessly from 3-point range. I think that's always something with DeRozan, you kind of look at his shot, it doesn't quite work from 3-point range, and that's always really plagued him. All right, let's talk about your guy.
Number one. Breakout. Again, we're talking about above average, and where else could I go except for Michael Porter Jr., the guy of the bubble. He's got to be the guy because he was not, Anthony, you know this, because I complained to you about it nonstop. He had this incredible month of January where Denver went through all these injuries, and he was forced to play, and he was incredible, kept the team afloat. They won something like 17 out of 25 games despite having almost everybody besides Jokic and him out of the rotation or out of the lineup. He gets hurt himself and never fully recovers. Will he get that 4-month break? You're curious what he's going to look like? Well, he looks like this. 26 points per game, 58% from the field, 50% from three on 7.5 attempts per game, 94% from the line. The best player on the court in multiple games. Him and the synergy between him and Jokic has been incredible. Jokic plays 23 minutes tonight, gets 13 assists. Those two guys together... If Denver would have pressed tonight, I really think they would have beat Portland, a fully healthy and hungry Portland team against a Denver team resting half of their roster. Michael Porter, he does not look like, and I know you're going to think this is crazy, he does not look like a rookie having a good moment. He looks like one of Denver's best players and most important players, and I think that's certainly going to be true in the coming years, but I think it's actually going to be true in this season as well. I think Michael Porter is a starter for this team for the rest of the season, even as guys return, and I would not be surprised if he leads them in scoring this bubble.
So I do have three questions with him.
Okay.
Because like you said, he's done this before, and was relegated. So my first question is,
he rolled an ankle.
Well, okay, but like he was so good that you would think that when he got back, you would find a role for him.
Oh, I got you. Okay, yeah.
So my question is, as everybody gets healthy, are there going to be minutes in a rotation that was pretty set heading into the season? And then the second thing, moving forward, like, it's great that he's this kind of offensive weapon, but we also know the value that Michael Malone puts on defense, right? So is he capable of playing Michael Malone's defense?
See, I think he's actually been
third
a very
question,
good – oh, geez, another one. Okay.
My third question is his YouTube history, if that's ever going to get in the way of him getting more minutes moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, last one, no comment. But the ones before that, you know, it's really interesting because Will Barton is the small forward, the starting small forward for the Nuggets. He hurt his knee in the ramp up to this in the training camp in Orlando and hasn't been able to play yet. But the thing I wonder is he has been talking about how good Michael Porter was when no one can see him other than the players who are watching, and he's been hyping him. And now that Michael Porter is out, he has put out on social media, on Instagram and on Twitter, saying this kid's the truth. Everybody get out of his way and let him flourish. I think he even said, take off the leash. It's time to let him go. When you are the starter and you're openly advocating for the young rookie to overtake that's, you. That's and by the way, point. Will Barton is 29. He is in the prime of his career, and he is advocating for Michael Porter to take his spot in the starting lineup, or at least to be in the starting lineup. Maybe Will Barton wants to move over to shooting guard.
Yeah, maybe he's like, I play shooting guard. Else's, yeah.
Somebody should sit out for this guy.
You know, he looks great at power forward, actually, the way I think, you know.
Anthony, I'm telling you, man, there's only two players that I have absolutely hyped for the Denver Nuggets. Back in 2016, yeah. I was hyping Nikola Jokic, and I told people this guy was for real. It took years for that validation to come through, but now everybody sees it. I haven't felt that way about Jamal Murray. I haven't felt that way about Gary Harris. All these other guys that have come through, I thought, good players, not great. Michael Porter Jr. is a superstar, and I think he's a superstar a lot quicker than people realize. Effortless three-point shooter, elevates over anybody. I think he's a 40% career three-point shooter on volume. And he's taller than everybody, hyper athletic, and he just has so many tools in the weapon, plays with a great motor. This guy is having his moment. And if Denver was a little more healthy, maybe he wouldn't have had the opportunity. But Denver has kind of slid under the radar because they've had so many guys injured. This dude right now is carrying them.
And also, by the way, at a position that defines organizations, that changes really organizations. This is like when you have a wing with length and athleticism and is capable of doing the things that Michael Porter Jr. is with his body type, you're talking the KDs, you're talking Kawhi, you're talking PG, you're talking
absolutely
the most important position in the sport. And if the Nuggets, you know, unearthed a star here, then that changes their ceiling. Maybe not this year. I don't know if it does it this year.
It's a little
but
quick.
Certainly yeah. moving forward.
It's a little. I think for this year, it elevates their ceiling above what it was before this week has happened. Like, yeah, I think it elevates but that.
I don't think to like a meaningful.
But yeah, I still think they're going to be a heavy underdogs against some of the top tier teams in the league. But he's. I'm telling you, Anthony, health is always going to be a concern. The guy had two back surgeries. You know, he's kind of skinny as a rail. He, you know, he's got some things in there that make you think twice about it. But double-double machine, 10 rebounds easy for him. And then I'm telling you, he will be one of the best shooters in the NBA before too long. And at 6'10", 6'11", that with all the other skills that he possesses, it's pretty insane. 25 yeah. points per game score very, very soon.
Do you want to talk about Bol Bol?
He's been fun. I mean, Bol Bol's been fun. Like, he's a, you know, he's not.
Have
he's
you
not
considered
like Michael
calling
Porter
this
Jr.
the Bol Bol? Like the Orlando Bol Bol?
The Bol Bol. He got dunked, by the way, he got dunked into another dimension tonight by Yusuf Nurkic. Nurkic really
he was turned into a Lunchable.
Yeah, he was turned into a Lunchable. He got sort of a welcome to the league moment. Nurkic, probably the best dunk of his career.
overall, though, I am really interested in this Michael Porter Jr. thing because that is the most important position, entity, whatever you want to call it in the league is like, if you look at the champions over the last, since LeBron came into the league, over more often than not, the team that won the championship had the best small forward that year.
Yeah. Right? And it's not just that though. I mean, I think it's more than just that part of it is that you've got to be covered inside, outside, and on the wing.
Yeah.
And I think Denver has a good outside player in Jamal Murray, not a great one, but a good one. They got a great inside player in Nikola Jokic. So you just need that third piece, and he's that third piece. And more than anything, I think it's the combination of all of it. But let me just say this, and you know me, Anthony. I was the prophet for Jokic back in 2015. Or the very mm-hmm. early I said this, everybody laughed at me for years. They're gonna laugh at me when I say this. Michael Porter has a chance. I'm not saying he's the favorite. He has a chance of being both the best player of his draft class and of his rookie class. Well, his draft class includes Luka Doncic. His rookie class includes Zion Williamson. If I were to ask you who has a higher true shooting percentage right now in their career, almost the exact same minutes, Zion Williamson or Michael Porter, who would you guess?
Probably Zion.
Because he dunks it and he only lives inside the paint. Going into today's games, Zion had a 0.1% higher true shooting percentage. 0.1, meaning almost exactly the same. Almost exactly the same.
That's right.
But given the fact that Michael Porter is so – he plays inside as well. He gets a lot of rebounds. But that he's such a heavy three-point shooter and perimeter-oriented player, and the fact that Zion lives in the restricted area, it's pretty wild to think that those guys have been as efficient in about the exact same amount of minutes.
I mean, the important question that needs to be asked here is what number do you think Porter will wear on the Lakers?
You got 24, you got 23, I guess 25. Is that one available? Is there any other numbers that haven't been retired yet?
Well, not yet. Not yet. We'll see who gets to the Lakers before him. That's going to do it, though, for this episode of the Locked On.
I'm going to get so much hate mail for that last one, and I'm so here for it. Going to clip all those receipts. Put them in a nice folder and open them up here in about 2 or 3 years.
Look, man, I'm here for it. I'm here. I really rarely hear you talk about players in the way that you talked about Michael Porter Jr. So either you're hilariously wrong and I get to laugh at you forever.
Yeah, exactly.
Or the Lakers walk away with an incredible free agent signing in a few years. So that is going to do it, though, for this episode of the Locked On NBA podcast and this week's episodes of the Locked On NBA podcast before Adam punches me through the screen for those last two Lakers comments. Make sure you guys are tuned in across the entire feed of these shows, but also across the entire network, whether your team is in the bubble or not. There's some great content being created for all of the teams in the NBA. And then outside of the NBA, we have Major League Baseball is in effect. I know the Locked On Dodgers guys do a really good job with their show. You have NFL ramping up. Hockey is being played right now. There's plenty of stuff to be talked about in college sports too, with whether or not they're actually going to play. So make sure you guys are tuned in across the entire network to stay informed, no matter which team it is that you follow. Have a great rest of your weekend, and Adam and I will talk to you again next Friday.